Welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. This podcast is brought to you in association with Game Refinery. Join us as we uncover the latest trends in mobile game design.
Hello and welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. Thanks for tuning in for another episode. This is a podcast all about what makes a great mobile game, what is and isn't working for mobile game designers, and all the latest trends. I'm your host, John Jordan, and today we are going to be discussing awards. In particular, we're going to be discussing the our own awards. So that's something to look forward to. And we have two people who are at the heart of those awards. So we have Erno Kieske, who is the Chief Game Analyst at Game Refinery by Liftoff. How's it going, Erno?
Hi, John. It's going great. How are you?
Good. And we also have Kalle Helkkonen, Senior Market Analyst, also at Game Refinery by Liftoff. How's it going, Kalle?
Very good. Just came back from 6 weeks of paternity leave. So excited to be back.
I thought you were going to say 6 weeks of holiday, in which case I was going to be very jealous. But 6 weeks of paternity leave, I'm just like, ooh, the fun's just started.
I know. Tell me about it.
Cool. Anyway, as I said, we're going to be talking about the Mobile Game Dev Awards, which are now in their second year. So, Kalle, tell us about the awards. Why did you start them off? What's the point of them? Who selects the winners? I guess that's what we really care about.
yeah, for sure. So, yeah, as you mentioned, this is the second year that we're doing the awards. And we just basically wanted to celebrate the games and the game developers specifically in our industry. And the process that goes into, you know, selecting the finalists and winners is actually pretty straightforward. So you might have noticed that the categories that we have, some of them are geo-related, and then we have some global categories. So geo-related meaning that we have Japan team that selects which, for example, in-game event was the most engaging or best event in the previous year in the Japanese market. And then the global categories are more like, we just look at the, you know, entire global market and then select what was the best game in that respect. So with the geo-separated categories, respective teams went through the games that we played in the previous year and then discuss which games would be the most suitable nominees and then also decide the winners. And then for the global categories, we obviously had these cross-team discussions as well to discuss that which game should be the winners. And like with these awards, we just really wanted to take into account the unique characteristics of the free-to-play and games as a service market. And that's why we have these categories like best evolver and best event and best collaboration event, which are all categories that perhaps you wouldn't see in more traditional, you know, gaming awards. So yeah, that's the sort of like the idea behind the awards.
No, I mean, those categories definitely reflect what's been going on in the last few years where, you know, I think probably 5 years ago, we thought mobile games were all going to be global and every game was going to be a hit everywhere. And we've definitely seen that change. And part of that is to do with live ops and how important they are. And we always go on about live ops. That's simply the one thing we talk about a lot in this podcast, which is so important. Erno, let's go straight into some categories. So we're going to talk about new best comers. What does new best comers category actually mean? And Do you want to run us through that one?
Yeah, of course. So basically, of course, the newcomers, what we wanted to highlight there are actual new entries. And especially if we look at especially the Western markets and we look at the top charts, like I said, the nature of the free-to-play games, naturally, as we all know, a lot of these games are played for years and years and years. And actually, new entries to the market, they can be quite rare, especially on the Western market, and those games that really break out. And especially those games that are able to break out and then maybe bring something new or some kind of a fresh angle to the market or to the specific genres and so on. So naturally we had multiple choices for example, for the US, for the time period, for the 2021 new entry games. But what we decided then in the end to give the award was BeatStar. So anybody who is not aware of BeatStar, it's actually a music game. So it's this a rhythm-based music game and so on. And why we especially wanted to highlight BeatStar was that the music genre and music type of games for mobile in the West, they have been quite niche. there have been these kind of like a really hyper casual type of kind of like a magic tiles, just, you know, play one song, tap into the rhythm, and that's about it. And the actual game is really, really simple, really, really ad monetized type of a hyper casual experiences. But in the West, we haven't really seen big hits, kind of like this bigger music style or music genre games in the West. And now when BeatStar came around, it's quite a casual approach. The focus is just on the core gameplay, just on the rhythm based completion of the levels and so on. But how they were able to actually incorporate the kind of like IAP monetization into the system and the progression system that they took, kind of like inspiration from Clash Royale's meta mechanics and so on, and how you are acquiring the songs, how you are getting further all the time, how you are progressing, how your catalog is growing all the time. And they were able to find a big success compared to many, many other, especially IAP crossing, kind of like a music games in the West, which is a big feat to be able to find success in this really small niche genre that has been on the mobile. If you look at Japan, and especially Japan, naturally there, the kind of like the whole music game scene, or like the rhythm-based game scene is like massive. Then there are like almost like this RPG type of idol collector type of games where the core gameplay is music. But on the West, those never has really broken through, and we haven't seen as big of a music games as BeatStar that was able to break in to the market and find big success. So that's why we wanted to especially highlight that one on the US side of the winners.
No, it's good. It's, having been involved with some awards over the years, it's always, you always sort of sometimes struggle, as you say, sort of come up with, there's always loads of new games, but they're always sort of competing with these games that have been around for like 5 or 6 years. So you almost feel like the newcomer one is always a little bit difficult because there's often they just haven't been a big enough hit into a mature market, but definitely BeatStar disproves that rule. And sort of interesting, I guess, because Space 8, the developer, UK-based company, but, you know, traditionally had been making a lot of sort of strategy-type games, or, you know, it wasn't clear that they were going to be very good at making a mobile music-type game. But really, really knocked it out of the park with that one. Cool, good. So that's our best newcomer. Kalle, we're going to talk about innovation and excellence in core gameplay. Bit of a mouthful, that category, but which game do you want to highlight there?
We definitely wanted to give a shout out to Harry Potter Magic Awakened. This was a game that was released in China last year. It will have a global release as well this year in the Americas and in Europe and in Oceania. But it's already out there in China, Hong Kong, Macau, and Taiwan, at least. And actually, this summer, there was this sort of like a beta version test for PC as well. But in China, it started with a very stellar top 10 grossing performance, but it has then been sliding down to top 100 grossing. I just checked that it's in the top 94 grossing position. But anyway, especially in the first couple of months, it was a very big success in China. I'm very excited to see how it will perform in the West, obviously. But then what made the game so interesting and great? Well, there are a couple of things that we just want to highlight. So first of all, the distinctive art style, as well as the story, which is it's a different storyline than in the books. Sort of actually a storyline that happens after the books events, but you have a lot of familiar characters in the storyline as well. So it sort of like feels like the little sister of the Harry Potter series in a sense. And the art style is just very distinguishable. It looks like it got inspiration from Tim Burton movies, and sort of like this kind of a dark academia or light academia inspired looks for the outfits of the player avatars and so on. And the core gameplay, it's very different from other games. You have this tactical battle layer with RPG elements there. That's a big part of the experience. But on top of that, there are like rhythm game elements in place, and even some like racing stuff thrown into the game. So it's really an interesting like mixed bag of various kinds of core gameplay ideas, and then you have this very compelling meta layer there as well. And then, like, I guess as a final note, I just want to add that the game also has a very deep social aspect to it. So all kinds of social stuff going on. You have obviously the guilds, but also, for example, a social wall in the game where players can share their fan drawings and stuff like that. So it's very, very interesting. And the customization of your player avatar is obviously a huge part of the game as well. So, and that's also enforced by the live ops that is constantly releasing new outfits and clothing for the players that they can use to dress up the avatar character. So yeah, very, very interesting game, and looking forward to the global launch as well.
Yeah, it's often it's kind of funny for such a sort of deep sort of IP that's been sort of so successful in sort of multiple sort of media that, I mean, there obviously has been loads of Harry Potter games, but it seems to have been, at least in my estimation, one of those IPs that hasn't really had like a brilliant game, or a game that you feel has sort of gone beyond the sort of source material. I think all the games have been sort of fine, but there's not really one, I don't think, that sort of where you really go, oh, they got the bit of Harry Potter that you could only do in a game. You know, I'm not saying Magic Awakened will be that one, yeah, it seems the art style is amazing. But I didn't realize it was quite so sort of mixed up in terms of genres. It's almost like a little Harry Potter miniverse. But yes.
Yeah, the Match Tree game though has been at least relatively successful, right? And then there's this a product game that you pay up front, premium game coming up. I can't recall the name.
Hogwarts Legacy, I think.
Legacy. Yeah, I think it was actually just delayed to next year or something like that. But that looks like interesting take on the IP as well.
But yeah, definitely I would say my kind of like 2 cents about that game is that I would say overall, like on mobile game market, actual the core gameplay, seeing innovative, interesting, engaging core gameplay can be quite rare once in a while, because especially in those more mid-core-ish type of genres, very often they are so meta-driven. The core gameplay is kind of like maybe nice for a while, but then it's goes into the outer grind, and the meta game is the actual game when you are progressing there and, you know, making your teams and strategizing over there. But then actually seeing something innovative, something kind of like a fun, different type of takes in core gameplay, especially on mobile, it can be quite rare. So in my opinion, also like the Harry Potter combination of having this kind of like almost, I don't know, like Clash Royale-ish type of it's a bit different from Clash Royale, but this kind of like a tactical one-on-one battler type of a core gameplay mixed with this kind of like a world where you're living in and all those mini game modes of rhythm games and so on. It's definitely kind of like a stands out from many, many other kind of like a similar type of entries in the market.
I guess without veering too much into politics, I guess the other interesting thing is in the West, Harry Potter now has, you know, at least a sort of contested sort of IP about what some of the fans think about it. Maybe less so in China, so maybe it's had a bit of an easier ride over there. But no, I've been quite looking forward to it. Actually, bizarrely, on a personal level, my daughter actually started reading the Harry Potter books. It's sort of interesting to, we started watching the films again with some of them. And it's sort of interesting, you sort of, you know, whatever you think about, I guess, the books and the sort of quality of the films, you know, the actual sort of the underlying universe is actually quite, you know, you can see there's a lot of depth there, and yeah, I just kind of think you just need a game to sort of bring it out in an interesting way. So maybe Magic Awakened is that one. Hopefully we'll find out this year. Okay, moving on to something pretty different. So Apex Legends finally made it onto mobile, at least in a soft launch, and it won the most promising soft launch game. That's probably only a category that you guys would have, the most promising soft launch game.
Yeah, and of course, like, these actual awards were handed out quite a while ago when we are discussing now. So actually Apex Legends has been global launch already for a month. So we are a bit late on discussing, to be honest, this. But why we initially, back then, we chose the game to be the kind of like one of the most interesting and one of the most promising ones was because, for example, I have played Apex Legends on console like, I don't know, hundreds of hours. And I was really skeptic on how they can actually, you know, execute the same kind of, because the game is so high-paced, so kind of like mobility is really high. You are moving around, you're sliding around, you're using kind of like a jumping around and this type of a high mobility type of a shooter game. And I was really skeptic on how they are able to nail it on the mobile devices. And actually, I had the similar type of experience when trying it out on mobile as I had when the Call of Duty Mobile came out. They were able to get the feeling of the original game super, super well. And that was super, super impressive. And that's one of the key reasons, naturally, why we wanted to highlight, because actually the actual gameplay is super well executed to kind of like honor the original and so on. And then another part of it is that because we know the game is naturally developed by Respawn from EA, but they are also cooperating and working together with Tencent and their Lightspeed and Quantum Studio with the actual live ops of the game, which naturally that studio which brought PUBG Mobile for the mobile market. So like the building blocks of the game, the actual core gameplay, which is the one of the key things for the shooter game, especially for a game that's just cosmetically monetized and there's no, you know, that's getting addicted to the progression loop type of a thing, but it's just about having fun in individual matches and competing against each other. Getting the gameplay feel down so well as they did, definitely a big thing. And then naturally, in terms of the monetization part, it's all about the live ops possibility and kind of like a capability of bringing enough content, enough engaging events and so on. That's working together with the Lightspeed and Quantum. Like the building blocks really, really were there. But to be honest, when we are now looking at the performance of the game, because we are talking a bit late about this, that it had really good initial splash. But to be honest, it actually has been declining quite a bit. And when we've been following the game more closely, they really haven't been able to kind of like get to the same level of content cadence as, for example, Call of Duty and PUBG are pushing content for the players. We will see in the future, are they able to scale it upwards to kind of like a catch up or find even more kind of like a stuff that they are able to push out. But at the moment, they are a bit behind on those like top three dominating games in the shooter market, which are naturally Call of Duty, PUBG, and then the Free Fire. So good start, I would say nice start, but in the long run, there are some signs of kind of like a slowing down quite a bit. So we'll see, are they able to get back on track with the live ops?
Yeah, it's always interesting that how many sort of shooters can survive, or how many games in any genre can sort of survive in that sort of situation. And something new comes along and everyone's sort of interested, aren't they? Everyone sort of, you know, stops playing what they're doing and tries the new one. But then, I don't know what your kind of views are. I think there's probably only one or two games that people can play sort of consistent, you know, that you're really consistently like, this is the one I'm doing. I'm making sure I'm getting all the, you know, getting all the battle pass stuff or the live ops stuff. And so probably, you know, if you're competing with Free Fire, like the biggest mobile shooter out there, Call of Duty and PUBG, that's that's pretty tough competition.
Yeah, that's definitely true. But one thing that I see for Apex as kind of like a strength is that it's a bit different from, like, if you look at Free Fire and PUBG, for example, they are really, really close to each other. But then with Apex, we had this kind of like a bit different type of bit different pacing, and the most importantly, it's a class-based shooter. So you're playing with the character classes and stuff like that. So it brings this quite a bit of different touch to it and kind of like a different flavor to it. But of course, the audiences are overlapping for the shooter market. And I would assume that, for example, Call of Duty, it's more mass appealing than, for example, the sci-fi nature of the Apex Legends. So I think it's never not going to be in the same level as those top three, but we'll see, is it able to sustain in the long run to some kind of a success.
And something else I thought as you were speaking there, sort of coming back to what we were talking about, sort of the global aspect of the games market. It was interesting that, you know, both with, you know, Harry Potter, we just discussed, you know, developed by a Chinese company with sort of American IP. Obviously, Apex Legends, exactly the same, sort of US IP with a Chinese sort of doing live ops, and also with Call of Duty, again, sort of North American IP. And it's sort of interesting that on the development side, not so much on the audience side, maybe, but that seems to be the, I'm sure it will change over time, but where we are with that sort of sweet spot that the sort of IP is being produced maybe in the West, but there was sort of the skill of having that live ops, and obviously, you know, a different sort of a wage structure for those big live op teams sort of really works out. So it's the best of both worlds, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess, and it is more and more a trend also, like the games having like development inside China, finding more and more success in the West. Actually, just, I think last week, they launched a game called Tower of Fantasy, which is this kind of like a pretty much the same level of gameplay, same level of polish as Genshin Impact has, but it's an MMORPG. And that's also like that type of a games, how massive their teams are, how much they are like pushing live, for example, Genshin Impact, like there are not really many Western companies who are able to actually execute in the same manner as those guys are doing with those massive live ops teams. So yeah, we'll see in the future how much it more and more goes towards to the China side.
Yeah, I think it really tells about how the demands and the expectations for the quality of the live ops have just gone up in the last couple of years. And then when you think about how to best optimize and execute that level of live ops, then you oftentimes seem to turn your head to the China direction and seek cooperation there, as there have already been such a good examples of studios and partners that are able to help Western companies and Western IPs to enter maybe genres that require a lot of content, heavy live ops and stuff like that. So like it just makes sense.
Cool. Okay, so let's move on. The biggest Evolver category, more than one winner in that one. So do you want to, Erno, you're going to talk us through what's going on there?
Yeah, sure. Especially I can talk about the US side, but I can touch on the other markets as well. But for the US side, we chose Clash Royale actually as the winner because, and the reasoning behind this was that if we look at Clash Royale, naturally, when it launched, it was a big hit. It was a massive hit for years, and it's by no means a new game anymore, of course. But the game had been declining quite a long time, and actually, same thing for most of the Supercell titles, like Clash of Clans, for example. There was no really growth anymore, and they had found their peak already. But if you look at 2021 in terms of Clash Royale, they were actually able to turn the boat around finally. So the decline had been going on for some time already. But for 2021, the game turned around again and then back on the growth in terms of revenues. So what did they then bring? They probably had most feature updates that they have ever had in the time span of a 1 year. So one thing definitely boosted, especially the revenues, they introduced these magic items, which are kind of like a consumable boost items that you can use to level up your characters or stuff like that. And then they were also monetized. They introduced the champion heroes, which are these kind of like, in Clash Royale, you built a deck of these kind of like a different cards, but then they brought this kind of like a hero card. So you can have one champion hero in your team, which is kind of like a bigger character, so to speak. And they brought that and their kind of like own systems with that, their upgrading systems for that and stuff like that. They brought, for example, card masteries, which is a feature which basically gives tasks for each individual card that you are using the card in battles, doing specific things with those. Then you get rewards for completing those tasks and you're collecting these kind of like a badges of honor in your catalog and stuff like that. And on top of that, I would say they also increased their efforts to their like live events, because what is interesting about Supercell that they have always been quite light in terms of live events compared to especially the current market. They are like, they have these kind of like a looping events that support different things, like, I don't know, boost the, like, the development, like in Clash Royale, that, okay, you have this boost, kind of like a specific type of a card for a limited time, or you have these tournaments that, okay, you need to use this type of a deck and try to complete it without, like, win, I don't know, 12 wins without losing 3 times or stuff like that. So, but pretty kind of like a light, I would say, compared to many, many other, especially mid-core games, how much they are pushing the live events. And Supercell has been always kind of light about it. But I would say during the last year, there was also more kind of like effort to the live ops, leading to a kind of like stronger events, leading to stronger support for the core gameplay loop. And all of this together, we finally saw Clash Royale to kind of like turn the tide around, and we found kind of like a back back to the growth route for that game.
No, as you say, the sort of games as a service thing is sort of fascinating, the sort of the undulations. But I guess, as we mentioned, I mean, Supercell have always, I can't remember what their team sizes are, but it's unbelievably small. You think most of these other games have bigger live ops teams than Supercell has for its entire games team. I mean, I guess that's its philosophy, is not to have too many people, and they have to then sort of cut their cloth to suit. But yeah, cool, good. And next one, category we look at is best use of IP in a collaboration event. So I guess that's playing on the events. Kalle, what are we going to talk about? State of Survival from FunPlus. So what was the collaboration event, and why do you think that was particularly good?
Yeah, this was an interesting one. So State of Survival, a game developed by FunPlus, they had a very, very big collaboration event with the Walking Dead franchise. I think it lasted like, was it 200 days or something? So that's like more than 6 months. I guess if we had also an award for the longest promotional collaboration event, we should give that to FunPlus. I don't think there are any contestants in that category that would be longer than that. But yeah, that was really interesting. Not only the length, but also the content. So there was all kinds of stuff going on in the during the duration of the event. But obviously, we have to talk about the sort of the matchup of the collaboration IP, because State of Survival is this zombie themed 4X strategy game, and obviously we know that Walking Dead is themed around the same subject matter in a sense, so this was a very good match when it comes to an IP collaboration event. In the event, the Daryl Dixon character was introduced to the world of State of Survival. There were, for example, a series of quests taking place on the main map that took the player to visit some of the most iconic locations in the Walking Dead franchise, including, for example, the Hilltop and Alexandria. And then, in addition to this, there was also this special PvE survival mode that utilized the hybrid RPG layer that there is in State of Survival. And just all in all, the integration of the Walking Dead IP and its iconic characters and the story and all that stuff into the world of State of Survival, it was so seamless and just a natural fit. So really a very impressive collaboration event. And it definitely helped the game last year to sustain in the top 20 grossing. So kudos to FunPlus.
And one thing I'd like to add, it's kind of interesting because we've been in this podcast also talking about like an increase of the collaborations and how more and more brands and different games collaborate together, or like consumer brands or TV series, movies, and so on, are finding kind of like a benefits and seeing the kind of like a value of collaboration with mobile games and so on. But usually those collaborations are this kind of like a really short term, maybe max few weeks. Usually in terms of content, they have maybe some cosmetics, something related to that. But like, what's the strategy of State of Survival has been kind of like in totally another level. Like, it's almost like building a game with an IP and then, you know, having it as that. But it actually is an event. It's not there for like for the permanently over there. But it's a long time. There's a lot of content. There's gameplay modes, all of that. But then it ends in the end at some point. And they have had, I think, do you color remember? They had one with, I think, Joker IP. This kind of like a bit similar, not as massive, but like the level of collaboration is something that we haven't seen in any other game. Collaborating with a brand that's not actually kind of like, it's not the game is not based on that IP, but it's an actually limited time, big kind of like a multiple months type of an event. Really kind of like unheard of and never seen in any other mobile games, I would say.
And it's sort of funny because there are quite a lot of The Walking Dead mobile games out there as well. So in some ways you could sort of think, is that really sort of confusing for audiences where there's, I don't know, half a dozen The Walking Dead games out there of various forms. So they're launching some new ones. But then you're sort of doing that within a game that could be seen as a competitor. I guess it sort of just sort of shows that these things are very sort of fluid, you know, collaborative things. You can have collaborations between vaguely competitive brands that actually are good for both sides, which I guess in this case probably was the case.
Yeah, definitely. It seems that I think it's the AMC is the IP holder of the Walking Dead. They seem to really have a big effort on going collaborating with the mobile games, because like I said, that's definitely the biggest one. But we have seen Walking Dead games, like you mentioned, but there have been also these different type of collaborations. PUBG, I think, had one. I think, if I don't remember correctly, I think Call of Duty also had one. There's now one running with this game, Puzzles and Survival, for example. So they definitely are collaborating with tons of games and throwing around the license and making deals quite a bit.
There's also the confusing part here that there's the Walking Dead TV series from AMC and there's the Walking Dead comic book from Skybound, which are two separate, totally separate companies. So there's licenses everywhere. Anyway, we'll leave that one. Okay, so the final one we're going to look at is best feature innovation. So we've had sort of innovation in various forms, best feature innovation. So what does that mean? We have Free Fire won that one. So we've mentioned Free Fire already. What was the innovation there?
Yes. So I guess you can't just have a podcast episode here without mentioning hybrid elements. So here's the hybrid part. But yeah, we wanted to highlight Gregor and Free Fire just because it has been very innovative when it comes to the sort of like live operated game modes that it has pushed out to the game during its existence. So there's been loads of sort of like special limited time modes that have had really innovative and fresh gameplay elements. And these gameplay elements have often been very, very different from the sort of gameplay experience you would normally associate with third-person shooters. So just to give a couple of examples, there was this Pet Mania mode, which allowed players to play as their own pets. And it was this sort of like a platformer battle royale. Then there was a mode called Lone Wolf Strike Out, which combined 1v1 dual elimination elements with social spectating. And it's just perfectly sort of like showcases the benefits of being brave in trying out different kinds of things and surprising your players and giving them reasons to be excited about new content, new game modes in your game, because you really never really know what kind of game mode is coming up next in the live ops pipeline. And maybe one thing I want to add to this is that Garena is obviously not the only shooter that does this, at least when we think about this in global terms. So at least in China, we have actually most of the top shooters, they do this actually quite often. They follow closely what's trending in the general gaming market and then make adaptations of these things, these trends, to their, you know, game modes, game mode portfolio. So we've seen, for example, very quick implementations of Fall Guys or Among Us when those were sort of like trending, that were then added to these not only actually shooter games but also like games like QQ Speed, and I remember QQ Dance, which is a rhythm game, also adding, I think it was this sort of like a Fall Guys mode. So it's just, you know, I guess the notion that I want to make here is that in the live ops schemes that game developers have in today's markets, they are also very much looking into what's happening in the general games market and looking at if there's anything that can be implemented to your game as a sort of like a hybrid element.
Yeah, I guess in a way that kind of like a ties, or like the idea can be tied into kind of like the whole where the market is nowadays and where the kind of like how difficult it's to launch new games and all the, you know, ATT stuff and so on tied to that. But like how important it's to kind of like keep your players engaged, and goes back to what we talked with Apex also, with the massive cadence of live ops that these mega shooter games are doing. And Garena Free Fire is a good example of offering not just, you know, cosmetic cadence, like a lot of cosmetics to buy, but they are actually creating these various type of experiences. So it's almost kind of like not a game anymore. It's almost like a platform already. So it's an interesting trend where these like mega games seem to be moving on.
At that point, we start using the term sort of metaverse. Is obviously they're not in some sense metaverses, but they are sort of quite interesting. It sort of goes against, I guess, maybe what in the West we have a rather formal description of this game is a sort of first person shooter, and the audience sort of goes, if you suddenly put Pet Mania sort of in my game, I'm going to be sort of very upset. It's going to demean the overall experience. But I think certainly in the Asian sort of gaming communities are sort of have a broader sort of approach to stuff. But yeah, Very good.
The only thing I'm going to say about this subject is that I've seen some really, really interesting combinations of KFC, like implemented in an IP event in games. So, and that's been in the Asian markets.
Because KFC is enormous in China, isn't it? It's like one of the really, really big fast food things that's worked in China. Yeah.
It's one of the biggest, if not the biggest, fast food chain in China. Yeah.
Okay. Well, on that note, we've covered a lot of ground, haven't we? Really? Wow. We've worked hard on this one. Cool. Thank you so much for your time, Erno and Calais.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thank you to you for listening or watching, depending on how you consume the podcast. I hope you enjoy it. Please subscribe through your platform of choice. Every month we are talking to the people who are sort of building out these new sort of crazy new sort of hybrid games. We talk a lot about mobile games, but we can see the sort of what a mobile game is really changing quite rapidly and a fascinating space. So hope you come along for the ride. Thanks for listening and watching, and see you next time. Goodbye.